This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Happy Saturday, folks. You know, this is going to be a thought-provoking show, I promise you. We're going to start off with some little-known background facts on this ISIS, ISIL, la-di-da mess that we have been purposely put in by Barack Obama and his administration. And their Muslim Brotherhood advisors, I might add. And I'm going to give you a much bigger picture than that. I mean, these are some interesting tidbits. But we're going to talk about why, just how many conflicts there are going on in the world, how many terror organizations, how many regional, local, country, international conflicts there are. It's going to blow your mind. You know, I talked in previous shows about the war cycles. You know, there are some very noted economists and philosophers who subscribe to the war cycle theory. And most of those agree that we're in the midst of a war cycle, the last one being really World War II, and that it's not going to peak until 2020. That's 6 years from now. Wow. But I want to talk about why we're in this war cycle. What is driving all of this? We talk about ideology, and absolutely it plays a role. You know, people on the left talk about social injustice, and perhaps it plays a role in some cases. But there's something else, energy. We're going to talk about that today. And we're going to talk about how all this, ISIS, all these other conflicts, these global energy wars that are breaking out, which I'm going to demonstrate to you, how they affect the common man, not just here in America, but in Europe, throughout the Western world, really, and perhaps in other places, and what is going on in terms of a rising up by the common man, by the middle class. And the middle class, remember, means different things to different folks in different countries. Our middle class here in America is the top 1% of wealth in the world. By the way, Barack Obama, when he talks about the 1%, he ain't talking about the 1% in this country, folks, because a lot of those guys give him moolah for his campaign. He's talking about you and me. We're the 1%. And we need to have our wealth redistributed, not only within the country here, to the 47, now 48% who don't pay taxes, and the 47 to 49% who get a government check, but to the rest of the world, because, you know, America's just a bad guy. We're a bad actor. We need to pay everybody back. We need to keep them going. And a lot of the European countries think the same way, and there's a revolt going on over there that we're going to talk about because you don't hear it on the news at all. If you remember, I was bringing up ISIS. I refuse to call it ISIL. I was bringing up ISIS months ago, and I was linking it to the poor southern border. You've all heard the reports about Iraqis, Pakistanis, Kuwaitis, you name it, from all the Middle East countries, known terrorists coming across the southern border, some of them caught, some of them not. I'm not going to go into that. Mainstream media has covered it, at least partially. And you all know about the threats that ISIS has made, and I was on that months before the mainstream media was on it. I mean, this is all 2+2, water runs downhill stuff. You don't have to be a 4-star general or the head of the CIA to kind of figure this out. But there's a much bigger picture at play. And my job is to bring you that picture that you haven't thought about and they won't tell you about. And that's exactly what I'm going to do today. And I'm going to end the show with some uplifting thoughts. There was a committee that was formed in the 50s. It actually solidified in 1958. It's called the Sound Dollar Committee. There were some incredible men on this committee. And they viewed it as their patriotic duty to try and keep America's fiscal house in order, to keep inflation, which wrecks currencies, down, to keep America out of debt, to stop the Fed from printing dollars. I mean, folks, this is 60 years ago. These guys were on it. Wait till you hear some of the names that were on this committee. I'm going to read you something at the end of this show from one of them, and I think you're going to find it profound, really. I know it's going to make you proud to be an American. And this is true 230 years ago when this country was founded, as it was in 1959 when this gentleman wrote it, as it is today. No matter what they tell you on the news, the mainstream media, Hollywood, and Barack Obama speaking to you between his golf games. First of all, you know, I have long held that Barack Obama secretly, maybe not so secretly, he's rooting for ISIS, right? They are the freedom fighters fighting against colonial tyranny from long ago. I know many of you shake your heads at this and go, oh, you know, the cowboy's off his rocker. Well, consider this. First of all, it's been absolutely proven beyond a shadow of a doubt and confirmed by the CIA, the FBI, and the military that Barack Obama knew about ISIS more than a year ago, that his generals told him to take them out when they were massing on the Iraqi-Syria border about to cross into Iraq from Syria. Barack Obama did nothing. Instead, he told us how the war on terror was over and how we're much safer and the world's a much more docile place. I mean, go to Google and Google it up. You can watch him talk for yourself. Google up Barack Obama, world a safer place. This is just a few months ago. Google up Barack Obama, ISIS's JVs. That was in January. You know, Google up Barack Obama, the Syrian freedom fighters, the Syrian free army is doctors and lawyers. That was another thing he refused to do, another dot for you. Refused to arm the Free Syrian rebels 2 or 3 years ago. Now they've been hacked to pieces. He's going to train 5,000 of them over the next year in Saudi Arabia and send them back into the fray to get cut to pieces again, on one side by Assad's army and on the other side by what will then be a 50,000 or more person army of ISIS. You know, when all this was gearing up and Barack Obama was talking about, you know, we need a new government in Iraq and la-di-da-di-da. And listen, Malachi was a bad dude. He did destabilize Iraq. He did make the Kurds and the Sunnis feel like they were not part of the central government. That's all true. But that goes back to Barack Obama taking all the troops out despite, as we have now learned in the last week through interviews, nationally publicized interviews, with Panetta, Clinton, and not that I might set much store in whatever lies she says, and others, that everybody recommended he keep a force of 7,000 to 12,000 in Iraq to kind of watch over Malachi, to make sure that this didn't happen. He didn't. And he's playing the same thing for Afghanistan. Another dot. Now, I'm going to give you some more dots here about our erstwhile president, quote-unquote, commander-in-chief. And I think it will lead you to believe that, A, he is taking the actions he's taking only because there's a midterm election. B, they're half-hearted at best. C, he's really rooting for the other side, including warning them, aiding and abetting the enemy, as I'm going to demonstrate to you. And in the process, he is either knowingly or unknowingly fueling this bigger picture I'm going to talk about today. The war cycles, global oil wars, collapse of the European Union, etc. So, you know, when the new government was being formed in Iraq a month or two ago, Iraq did not send a delegation to Washington to find out if they approved of the solidification, if you will, of the various factions that were coming together to form a new government. No. You know where they sent their delegation to get approval? To Iran. Yes, to Iran. And of course, another dot for you, Barack Obama is not going to stop Iran from getting the bomb. I mean, he actually went through Valerie Jarrett, his consigliere, General Jarrett. He actually went to Iran and asked them to participate in this battle against ISIS. Now, you know, Iran's all about getting a nuclear bomb. I'm sure some deal was made. And it's going to be up to Israel to take him out. And then, of course, you heard the president in his United Nations speech just this week, tear apart Israel. Never mention Iran or nuclear proliferation. And instead, he has Kerry and himself talking about climate change. Kerry, what a limp putz he is, has actually said three or four times, the most recent one being this week, that climate change is the biggest enemy that mankind faces. Well, you know, man, Mr. Kerry, I got to just tell you something. See, if we're the subject of a biological attack, if we're the victims of a nuclear dirty bomb, or worse, or an EMP by a more sophisticated enemy like Russia and China, your global warming just doesn't matter. Don't you get it? How much smoke comes out of a coal stack doesn't mean squat when it comes to the lives of Americans and their families. What is wrong with you? Are you folks this far out of touch? How pathetic. No wonder ISIS got the toehold they did. Unbelievable. So Iraq sent their delegation to Iran to get approval for the new government, not the United States. Let me throw out another dot for you. So, you know, the president has lied to us for years about the fact there was no troops left in Iraq because they couldn't get a status of forces agreement. And the key thing that was hanging everything up was that if they left American troops there, that they would be immune from Iraqi prosecution. As we all know, there's now about 2,000, at least, American combat troops on the ground in Iraq. And you can call them whatever you want, Mr. President. But they're wearing uniforms and they got guns with bullets. And to me, just little old me, that's a combat. That's a combat soldier. Do we have a status of forces agreement yet? Question mark, question mark, question mark. Hell no. So, he didn't keep troops in Iraq because there wasn't a status forces agreement, which was all the Iraqi government's fault. But now he can send troops back in there with no status of forces agreement and everything's okay? Really? You know, when you blow a weak trumpet, the armies and the allies don't follow you. And I think this president is blowing a weak trumpet on purpose. He really doesn't want anybody to follow. he really doesn't want this large coalition that he crows about on TV to materialize. He's tickled pink that five Arab countries are in there giving him cover in political BS. But he doesn't tell you that it's only 12 planes. He had all his friends in the media trumpet just in the last few days about three new partners joined the fray. Well, the largest contributor joining the fray is Britain, finally. And you know what their contribution is? Number one, they will only bomb in Iraq. And number two, six Tornado fighters. Okay. So we got 12 planes from the Arabs, and we got six planes from Britain, and we got some planes from France, and then we got our one carrier group. Any military expert will tell you it takes two to continue a sustained air campaign. There's not even one being deployed to assist the USS Bush. Another dot. Now, let's go one step further. So, the president, when he announces that he's going to bomb Syria, he didn't say it. Do you remember when Bush came on? And this is not about cheering for Bush. This is about basic military strategy. When you want to win. Bush came on and addressed the nation. And the attack on Iraq and the attack on Afghanistan, he did it twice, had already begun. You know, 6 hours, whatever it was before. He came on to inform us of an attack that was underway. Barack Obama instead gets up like the pompous, elitist, ideological fool he is. Or brilliant man he is, I suppose. He gets up and he gives our enemies 12 days warning. From the time he said we're going to bomb Syria to the time we actually bombed Syria was 12 days. Now, I think we can all agree that ISIS is a formidable enemy. Pretty damn smart. Good tactical moves. Seizing oil fields. We start wrapping into the global oil wars. Seizing oil fields, power dams, banks, radioactive material from Mosul University. I mean, these guys kind of know what they're doing. They have a strategy. You don't think that they were capable of moving all their stuff with 12 days warning? You can't tell me that wasn't intentional. Nobody is that big a moron. And here's the final dot for you. When we finally do bomb them with 24 airstrikes, you got a 30,000 man army with command and control, logistics, etc., that probably involve another 40 to 50,000 support people. Almost all of whom are in Syria, who are given 12 days warning. And on the night that we bomb them, hours before the first bombing run, we tell the Syrian government, this is the same government that we've been told he wants to go away. You know, the same government that uses chemical weapons on its people. The same government where he drew the red line and didn't enforce it. And Iran, really, you notified Iran of the attack before our planes left the carrier after giving the enemy 12 days warning? You know, that concept of the enemy of my enemy is my friend, that works, that's a two-edged sword. Now, between ISIS, which is Sunni, Iran is Shiite, between ISIS, and America, who do you think Iran hates more? I guarantee you it's America and Israel. So we're telling them hours before. You don't think that word got back to ISIS in Syria? Hey, guys, if you haven't been able to move your stuff for the last 12 days, man, you still got a couple hours. Rock and roll. And then finally, when we do the bombing runs, it's at 3 in the morning. Go online. New York is 7 hours behind Baghdad. Give or take an hour, it's the same time zone. The Rocky Mountains here are 9 hours behind Baghdad. The attacks launched, Google it up, at approximately 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Excuse me. That's 3 and 4 in the morning. Now, if you wanted to kill terrorists, you wanted to take out leaders, people, which is what command and control is. It's, you know, the people who lead other people. That's command and control. You think you bomb them at 4 in the morning? Or would you bomb them like midday? How about during call to prayers? Morning call to prayers at the workshop. That'd be a good time. But we didn't. So you think Barack Obama is A, wants to win this war with the limited strikes and all the dots I've given you, and B, is going to continue it after the midterm election? I don't think so. We'll wait and see. Maybe he'll keep up like 2 or 3 bombing runs a day, which is nothing, zero, nada. Just so it kind of, you know, gives him the cover of still doing something. But this guy has sent every message in the world. During the UN speech, he praises an Islamic cleric who issued a fatwa on American soldiers in 2003-2004. And is regarded as by the State Department as a terrorist leader. Yet the President of the United States invoked this guy's name as a symbol, an example of Muslims who want peace. Okay. Enough of ISIS, ISIL, and a traitorous president. Let's get to a bigger picture here. Here's the bigger picture. Let's assume these guys who talk about the war cycles are correct. And even if they're not, I think we can agree that if you look at all the conflicts that are going on in the world, and I'm going to tell you how many there are, I mean, you're just going to freak out. I did. And I follow this stuff. Oil wars are conflicts that target energy reserves or use energy supplies for economic destruction. So there's military and economy. You know, wars are being fought now kind of on a cyber plateau, on an economic plateau, and on a boots in the ground, F-18s in the air plateau. Wars are no longer just a tank going across sand. The importance of the oil factor absolutely can't be underestimated. And by the way, here's another dot. Has Barack Obama approved Keystone yet? Has Barack Obama lifted his imposed EPA restrictions, which are growing more voluminous on private oil exploration and fracking? Has he opened up federal lands to make America more energy independent? Did you know America still imports about 200 to 300 million barrels of oil a day? It's going to be 6 or 7 years before the American oil industry, if it's not crippled by Obama, the EPA, and his progressive cronies, to get us to the point where we're truly, give or take a few percent, energy independent. That, of course, could be speeded by the right policies and decisions and executive orders by the White House, which never seem to be forthcoming. You think that's a coincidence? Did you know that ISIS now controls Iraq's largest oil fields? Basically, it gives them control over the region's energy supplies. And you know, that's kind of a big deal. That's a big deal because if ISIS won in Kurdistan against the Kurds and took over southern Iraq, you know, Baghdad south, they'd control 140 billion barrels of proven oil reserves. That's more than the combined reserves of Libya, Nigeria, Kazakhstan, China, Brazil, and Mexico. Think about that. And these guys, you think that these guys can't hire whom or what they want to hurt us? Really? So, the end game here of all these countries, I mean, let's take a look. It's not just ISIS. Let's take a look at Russia. Russia is already a huge energy exporter. I mean, basically, if Russia turns off the switch, there's going to be a lot of cold people in the dark in Europe. The conflict between Ukraine and Russia began with energy. How much Russia was charging, Ukraine trying to get energy independence, etc. That's what started what's called the Kiev Revolution. And that is what's fueling, no pun intended, the current war. Russia's stranglehold on energy over there is what retarded the retards in Europe from issuing strong sanctions. I think they need to do a lot more than that, but, you know, let's talk about sanctions. And if you don't think that Putin's not going to pull the plug, you know, he banned food imports from the United States and Europe, which hurts. If you don't think he's going to pull the energy plug, well, guess again. Putin's goal was not just the Crimea seaport and landmass, but it expanded his maritime zone almost by 3 times. And there's underwater resources there in the form of energy, which Ukraine had hoped to make themselves energy independent, i.e. not dependent on Russia anymore, not something that Russia wants to see happen. And they're worth trillions of dollars. Trillions. So, Putin's a smart guy. And I'm sure there's smart guys on our side that have figured this out too. Maybe even the advisors to Barack, because Barack kind of wants us to lose and them to win. And I'm not going to go into that anymore. I mean, if the dots I've given you just today, never mind the last 4 or 5 shows, don't convince you, you're beyond convincing. By all means, go out and elect more Democrats. Go out and vote for Barack Obama. Eric Holder, if he runs for office, although actually I think Barry in here hatching up a scheme to get him on the Supreme Court, God forbid. Energy reserves are the target of Islamic extremists in Libya, Nigeria, and throughout sub-Saharan Africa. There's economic wars, currency wars, trade wars, civil wars, regional wars, cold wars, revolutions, social chaos, all over the place. And every place that you see it, in one way, shape, or form, it has to do with energy. And America, despite all the hype you've heard to the contrary, because the oil and gas industry is getting more and more hamstrung by the EPA under Obama's direct dominion, along with Valerie Jarrett and the rest of the White House staff, no Keystone, etc. This affects us still. Big time. Big time. That kind of brings us, because when oil gets scarce, oil rises. Oil rises in price. And when oil rises, folks, just about everything else on the... excuse me, I've had this cough the last 3 days. Just about everything else on the planet goes up too. Because oil is used for many, many, many things, not just for fuel and vehicles. Plastics, for one. Think about everything in your life that's plastic. So, as inflation goes up, the value of currency goes down, and the common man is squeezed more and more. Higher taxes by governments who have made one economic mistake, geopolitical mistake, military mistake after another, because it's all politics. It's not about the nation. It's not about the people. It's about politics, ideology, power, elitism. If you think about this, the runaway inflation of the late 1970s, you know, some of you remember it, some of you may not have been born then. I know I have a lot of younger listeners, and thank you, you folks around the country who are under 30, and listen to me. The runaway inflation of the 1970s, I mean, we had inflation rates, real inflation rates of 15 to 20%. We had interest rates 18%. Because lenders have to get a return on money. And if money is devaluing, which is really what inflation is, right? It's the devaluation of the dollar, not the increase in price or value of goods and services. That runaway inflation in the 1970s was worse than any prior economic crisis after World War II. Then we had the S&L and the bank failures of the 1980s. Remember those? And that kind of made the 70s look like a walk in the park. And then we had the big tech wreck in the early 2000s. Remember when the stock market just kind of fell apart, particularly tech stocks? It destroyed more wealth than either the inflation of the 70s or the S&L and bank failures of the 80s. And then that was followed by the housing bust of the late 2000s. And that caused more financial damage than the tech wreck. So you see, not only are these war cycles gearing up, but the troughs, the problems, the huge problems, then we're not talking about minor problems, in the economic machinery of the world, each one is larger than the last, and the time is being condensed between them, which is leading to unrest, leading to the need for energy, because energy is the fuel of growth. And when you're trying to get an economy righted, you need lots of energy. And each time, the Europeans, Washington, I mean, really all the countries do it. We just do it more than the rest. They trotted out bigger and bigger economic guns, you know. I mean, now we're printing money and buying our own bonds. Holy smokes, think about that. That'd be like you going out and buying a Monopoly game at your local toy store and coming home and buying your mortgage with it. I mean, I don't know how else to explain it to you. We're printing money to buy our own debt. All right. And by the way, Lots of other countries are doing the same thing. Japan, virtually the entire Euro Union, the pigs, Portugal, Italy, Greece, and Spain. The European Central Bank, I've done shows on this. Go back in the archives and listen to them. Look under finance, economy, international. Listen to some of the interviews I've had with national and international financiers. This has been a long time developing. I was sounding the alarm on Europe 2 or 3 years ago. And I'm sounding it, and I'm ringing an even bigger bell for you now. Because now Europe is caught up in this entire global oil war, a la Russia and Ukraine, a la the Middle East, ISIS, and other Islamic extremists in sub-Saharan Africa, where Europe gets much of its other energy resources. And Europe doesn't have the luxury of the United States. You know, they have reserves, yes, North Sea, etc., and there's reserves under their lands. But, I mean, it's a thimbleful compared to what we have here in America. A thimbleful. And this brings us to this committee that was formed. You know, there were such people involved as Bernard Baruch, who, by the way, was an advisor to many presidents. Leonard Paul Spacek, who was one of the founders of Arthur Andersen, in fact, the second managing partner. General Leslie R. Groves. You may have heard that name. The name of the committee, by the way, was the Sound Dollar Committee. Leslie R. Groves was a general who really, although he cleverly remained incognito, was kind of the landlord, the overseer of the Manhattan Project. Under his ramrod skills, two entire nuclear facilities in different places in the country were built in 18 months. 18 months. That would be an almost impossible feat today if you had no regulations. Never mind back then when they were doing it for the very first time. The guy was brilliant. And one of the reasons he was on the Sound Dollar Committee, and by the way, he was also behind the construction of the Pentagon. Groves knew that the financial stability of America was a key part of its national security. That's why he was on the Sound Dollar Committee. By the way, Groves was adamantly opposed to proliferation. He did not even share the secrets of the Manhattan Project with the White House. Never mind the sharing of technology that we have done with China, Russia, other enemies and adversaries. Our lack of actions when Khan, the guy from Pakistan, was selling nuclear secrets openly, for years, to North Korea and Iran. I mean, look where that got us. Groves was quite a man, as was the rest of the committee. There's a guy by the name of Dean Alfange, A-L-F-A-N-G-E. He was the legal counselor to the Sound Dollar Committee. In fact, he was the last name to appear on its stationery. He wrote something. I'm going to leave you with this thought. I mean, we've talked about doom and gloom here for, I don't know, the last 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 shows. I've been sending out the warnings to you. Make sure you read the articles this week. There's some really interesting articles on the military. There's some fascinating and unfortunately scary, but you need to know articles that you simply aren't going to get. You're simply not going to get the information in the mainstream media under terror. And then there's a number of other articles. By the way, there's kind of a fun article under fun. You know, I don't fill that heading too often, but there is one this week, and I think you'll get a kick out of it. That's all I'll say. But anyway, Alphonse wrote the following. It was called An American Creed. I do not choose to be a common man. It is my right to be uncommon if I can. I seek opportunity, not security. I do not wish to be a kept citizen, humbled and dulled by having the state look after me. I want to take the calculated risk to dream and to build, to fail and to succeed. I refuse to barter incentive for a dole. I prefer the challenges of life to the guaranteed existence, the thrill of fulfillment to the stale calm of utopia. I will not trade freedom for beneficence, nor my dignity for a handout. I will never cower before any master nor bend to any threat. It is my heritage to stand erect, proud, and unafraid, to think and act for myself, enjoy the benefit of my creations, and to face the world boldly and say, "This I have done." All this is what it means to be an American. I'll leave you with that thought. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Have a great week, and we'll talk at you next Saturday.